Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Guide to Financial Peace. This is No BS Money Guy Todd Strobel. We've got a special show today where we're going to be talking about the price of being free. And interestingly enough, none of you out there who are listening to this are paying for this service right now. So this is, in fact, an example of something that has no cost to you, but hopefully you receive some value from it. And we're able to collect together the listeners and then monetize that by finding other ways that we can help solve the problems in your life that we're able to exchange for value, that you like what we have to say and keep coming back and downloading. And I know we passed 150,000 downloads, so somebody out there is downloading. No way to know if you guys are actually listening, but we do appreciate y'all. So this is going to be kind of the topic for today, which free is just, it's an interesting concept because in some ways it can be the most expensive, and in some ways, for the first time in history, we're actually in a situation where we can deliver real value without an incremental cost having to be paid by somebody, and that's through digital delivery. So we have our resident financial expert and financial author, Kim Butler, with us. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hello, Todd. Very fine. Thank you much. And this is such a great concept because, as everybody knows, financial advisors often, quote, work for free, and yet they really don't. And everybody also knows that. So what's the deal? Not only what is the real cost of free, but what's the definition of free? And I think it's Robert Kiyosaki who said this. He may have been quoting somebody else. I can't remember. But it is a favorite quote of mine, and that is that the most expensive advice is free. And, of course, on the Internet today, which is where all the digital revolution is occurring, there is massive amounts of free advice. So we have to be really careful when we're looking at this. And so I'm totally looking forward to our discussion today to see if we can help some people get a handle on what really is the cost of free.
Awesome. And I think you've hit the nail right on the head, and that's when we're looking at something that's free, we have to determine whether what we're looking at is free because it has little value or free because perhaps someone else is picking up the cost. In other words, if we take the issue of insurance, the idea of insurance is that collectively we pay premiums. Probably most often this would be maybe in health insurance, maybe somewhat in car insurance. And by paying those premiums, we have access to services, but not all of us need those services. So we go to the doctor, and maybe it's a $5 copay. Maybe there isn't a copay. Maybe we get a prescription, and it's relatively inexpensive. And maybe we pay $5,000 a year in insurance, and we get $200 in benefits. Maybe we pay $5,000 a year in insurance and we get $50,000 a year in benefits, and it looks like we're receiving free or low-cost health care when really what's happening is that other people are paying for our free, or if we're using $200 worth of services and paying the $5,000 worth of premiums, in that instance, we're financing someone else's free, or in the case of working for an employer, the amount of compensation that we're physically seeing is less because our benefits cost the employer but don't cost us. So I think number one is determining why is it free or low cost to us. Comments on that?
Well, I just love your using insurance as an example for this because people tend to lump all insurances together, and the insurance company is the bad guy. We immediately get our defenses up. We immediately think something's wrong. We get told all these different things. This is a classic example of massive advice out on the Internet, all of which one could consider free. And one of the things that we have to remember is that when we read things out on the Internet, when we read a book even, when we listen to the TV or the talking heads or look at a newspaper, that advice is generic and it does not apply. And this radio show is the same way. when we speak on the radio, you and I are not talking to an individual. We're talking to our group of listeners. And so anytime advice is given on a generic basis, we have to really be, as a listener, on the lookout for learning with the advice. There's nothing wrong with that. But for making sure that that advice applies to us. So back to your insurance example, this is a classic environment where, for example, with health insurance, we're trying to get the most bang for the least buck. In other words, we want to keep our premiums as low as possible. Is that always wise? Well, you've pointed out that clearly it's not. When you take a look at a completely alternative product called life insurance, so I kind of think of health insurance as opposite to life insurance because one you deal with daily and the other, I guess you deal with them both daily, but one you want to deal with as little as possible, the other one you want to deal with as much as possible. Life insurance is something that we want to put the most money into as possible. And it's really hard with clients to get them to shift their gears because with health insurance, car insurance, disability insurance, all these types of insurances that we want to keep our deductibles high so we can keep our premiums low, we want to put in as little as possible, we make decisions. But then when we, and the reason we make those decisions are because health insurance, car and home insurance, disability insurance, renter's insurance, liability umbrellas, et cetera, all of those are if events, IF. If this happens, then I want the coverage. If this event occurs, then I want to be protected. Life insurance has to be looked at totally oppositely, and you really have to delve into this issue of cost because life insurance is a when event, W-H-E-N, and because of that, it has to get looked at totally differently. The cost has to be spread out over your entire life, whereas typically car, home, health insurance, it's either 6 months or 1 year or one quarter or 1 month or some kind of other short-term time frame. Again, life insurance over your whole life, so you have to look at it completely differently as a, quote, cost. And when you're looking at this issue of cost, again, I reiterate, you must be clear on is the advice you are following for you. Give you an example of that. Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman, forgot the guy's last name for a minute. I'm not sure how, but I did. Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman give tons of advice for free. It's designed for the lower half of middle-class America. That means the upper half of middle-class America and anybody that is considered, quote, wealthy, the advice that is free given by Ramsey and Orman is not only potentially wrong, it's harmful. So you have to be super careful if you don't fit the category of where the advice is coming from in implementing that advice because it's not for you.
Well, and I would point out, too, that I don't remember the name of the book, but there is a book written specifically about Dave Ramsey's market. Gosh, I think it's like Carded or something like that. And the majority of them are functionally illiterate, meaning that they could not balance a checkbook. And I don't want to make this sound negative because his advice is very good for that market. They're the buy here, pay here car lots. They're the payday loan type environment where they can get taken advantage of. So the reluctance to use financial products and staying away from those is probably – now, the second thing is that Dave Ramsey has a couple major sponsors. Sponsor number one is the United States Bankruptcy Attorneys Association because getting out of debt through bankruptcy is profitable to that segment of the market. And sponsor number two is the largest chain of pawn shops in the country because he oftentimes instructs people to sell their stuff, and in selling their stuff, there's another market that benefits from his advice. So keep in mind, he gets money from selling courses, he gets money from sponsorship, and we have to look at if sponsors are paying him, it has to be in alignment with their message. So the message of bankruptcy and selling stuff through pawn shops and that segment of the marketplace, I mean, even that makes me just a little suspicious.
Boy, Todd, that is valuable information. I had not ever heard that. I was well aware of another book called Pound Foolish that does address some of his issues. And there is some addressing also of Susie Orman's issues in that book, and clearly she has her own set of sponsors, many of which do not do the things that she recommends, nor does she do the things that she recommends. And there's a mixed message there, because when you talk about the cost of free advice, it wouldn't make any sense for Susie Orman to do all of the things she's recommending, because what she recommends is for a different set of financial circumstances than her own personal set of financial circumstances. So you have an immediate dichotomy there, because her show is very popular, she's very helpful to a lot of people, but she shouldn't be following her own advice because her message is not for somebody like her. And yet we as an audience get the hair on the back of our neck to stand up when people don't walk the talk, when they don't follow their own advice. So, you know, I guess I could get a little sympathy going for the Dave Ramseys and the Susie Ormans of the world, because they really can't follow their own advice. But, wow, what fabulous information on sponsors and how we – that their sponsorship makes us get Dave Ramsey information for free. And yet it's sponsored, so it has – what would you say? It has it's not objective. What's the word I'm looking for? It's the opposite of objective.
Well, I guess I would, in for the benefit of the doubt, I would say that his message is what his message is, and that it attracts a certain type of sponsor. I would not say that he's changing his message to fit the sponsor. He's helping people to get out of debt, and if getting out of debt requires you to file bankruptcy, which he has personally done twice, then attorney relationships make sense. If selling unnecessary items to get out of debt makes sense, then a relationship with the pawn shop community makes sense. The one sponsor of his that does not make sense to me, and I don't know if they're still a sponsor, was a $5,000 mattress company that, you know, buying a $5,000 mattress and box springs and getting a good night's sleep. Not sure if I could quite give him the same credit on that level, but I will say that, he doesn't seem contained. I believe he believes his message.
Yes, that is very true, and we have to give him credit for that. It is funny when we look at this question of, is there such a thing as a truly free product or service? One of the things that I counsel clients on all the time, and it's a really difficult area for people to get their arms around, is their own money also has a cost. So not only are we saying that advice has a cost, that products have a cost, but I'm suggesting and can prove numerically that each person's own money has a cost also, and this is often referred to as opportunity cost. As a matter of fact, I was just reading some information about a gentleman that was born in 1680 and died in 1734. His name is Richard Cantillon, with a C, Cantillon. And he wrote about opportunity cost that long ago. As a matter of fact, he's credited as being the originator of economic theory. So here we have our own money that we think we can do whatever we want with, and even it has a cost. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you could even take it further into every decision has a cost, because in order to make a decision, there are other decisions that cannot be made, and that's the definition of opportunity cost. I mean, if I go to a movie theater and I'm going to watch one movie and there are 15 playing, the 14 that I'm unable to watch are the opportunity cost of the one that I did.
Yep, that's right. It's a great example. And it's important to understand that we can't take this example too far. For example, food would be another environment. We could choose to spend $50 at Ruth's Chris for a steak for one meal, or we could spend, well, let's just go $5 because it's easy math, for Big Mac, et cetera, for 10 different times. And you could argue that there's an opportunity cost in that decision as well. And, yes, we could say there is, but there's a whole bunch of lifestyle choices, et cetera, that go along with it. So it's important, as it is with all analogies, that we not take them too far, but that we use them to understand. And movie decision or the food decision is a great way to understand opportunity cost, even though we can acknowledge that we're going to accept that we cannot live our lives with zero opportunity cost. But we can also accept that we can learn about the basic economic theory. It's been around, what I say, since 1680, of opportunity cost in finance, in our own personal financial environments, and we can make better decisions because of it. Back to how you opened your comments with the show, if we're making a decision on low deductible or high deductible, whether it's around health insurance or car insurance, that decision can have an opportunity cost for the rest of our lives. And I think that that is a very surprising thing to some people, because if you truly have a situation where you're making a decision, and not that these decisions can't be changed, thankfully, but when you are 22, straight out of college, the decision that you make around your car insurance has a $2 to $3 million opportunity cost associated with it. And I'll explain if we have some time. Was there another thing that you were hoping to get across while we were talking here?
I think that the biggest point when I was setting up the show is just understanding the real costs of free, because we're in a situation right now where the government is providing higher levels of service to each of us probably than any other time in history, through earned income credits, through Social Security, through so many things that we accept on a personal basis as being owed to us, but yet at the same time, only the people, ourselves included, have to pay for that. There is no such thing as free. And with the government in the situation that I'm in today, that's really, I wanted to make sure that we're looking at that. So when we're saying, wow, I think minimum wage should be raised, wow, I think unemployment should go for 5 years instead of 1 year, that money may be free to the people who are receiving it, but there's a corresponding cost. And right now, the deficit or the government debt is being caused because we're spending more money than we take in. And I think that's something that each of us has to take responsibility for, not just say that government's going to figure it out, because on a personal level, we're using credit the same way that the government is.
Absolutely, and I agree. I appreciate you really honing in on this. This is way more important than my car insurance example, so we'll stay with it. So one of the things that has helped me, and this is actually a comment that my husband made, which is instead of using the words, quote, the government, that we instead use the words, quote, the taxpayers. It helps us put the responsibility where it should lie, which is on the taxpayers. When we say, quote, the government is paying for something, there isn't some big man in Washington called the government with an endless pocketbook. That, quote, man, that service, if you will, that the government provides is the taxpayers, and it's the taxpayers' jobs that do it, and it's the taxpayers' work that does it, and it's all coming from the taxpayers. And we have to be aware of this. You've said it so well in terms of the cost that that entails. And if we're not, as taxpayers, aware of it, if we're not doing things to limit that cost, if we're not being wise with our voting capability, then we, as the taxpayers, are going to get the results that any family gets. I heard a great analogy the other day. It was basically the government's costs all broken down to a personal family. And it said something like, if you as a family earned $30,000, but you spent $50,000 and your net worth potential was, you know, $10,000 or something like that, what financial shape would you say that family was in? Well, clearly close to bankruptcy, or at least in harm's way in terms of their finances. Well, if you just add a bunch of zeros to that, that's basically what our government is doing and how our government is living its financial life. And that's really where the problem lies.
Got it. And, you know, another great example is if you have a $50,000 a year job and you lose that job and someone hands you a $50,000 MasterCard, you don't feel the effects of that for the first 12 months, but you're still not bringing in any income, correct?
Correct. And we know what that does to your family in terms of that unearned income, but there's another cost there that is very difficult to measure, and that is the emotional and psychological impact of not being a productive member of society. And I'm well aware that there's some people that just can't, and there's other people that, for whatever reason, typically because they're taking care of young children, they're a productive member of society, but they don't show that in their monetary contribution, if you will. So setting those two issues aside, the bulk of society gets more value by working than just the paycheck that they receive. And so we have to look at the cost of not working, not just in lost income, but also what it does to us psychologically and emotionally and to our families and our own sense of well-being, et cetera.
Awesome. And then one point I just want to hit before we've got about 5 minutes left is the fact that for the first time in history, with digital delivery and global internet, the true possibility of near-free distribution is possible. Comment on that.
Well, we've had our own example of that with the books that we have out on the internet. You truly can afford to send somebody the book for free. The email is free. It's a PDF. There's truly no cost to that. So then it goes back to your question of, well, what is the value? And this is where I'd like to introduce the idea of people having skin in the game. And that is because when we as consumers have skin in the game, in other words, when we pay $5 or $10 for the book, we have to ask ourselves, do we treat the value received differently than when it was free? And so as an example, I've asked people to buy our book. $10, you get the book. It's yours. I believe you'll actually read it if you pay $10 for it. But there's occasions, for whatever reason, with somebody that I will say to them, you know what, let me send you that book, and my request to you is that you forward it to 4 or 5 other people that might be interested in it. So there you have a different kind of cost. And so I think the answer to your question is there really isn't anything such as free. Okay, yeah, there's always exceptions. But for the most part, there isn't anything as free, nor should there be, because there's always a trade. There's always something of value for something else of value. And if there isn't, the free thing truly valuable.
Well, and as the abundance of information and technology increases, the scarcity of our time becomes more important. And I'm going to illustrate this with an example. There's an airline in England right now that is working to provide free seats on the planes that would cost absolutely nothing. Now, they've got the cost down to, I think, $40 or $25 so far, by the fact of you now have 2 hours of dedicated time where people are cut off from the world, and marketers are willing to pay and subsidize those plane seats to have that two hours uninterrupted time. There's another airline that's proposed something similar where they would have in-flight gambling and they would make money as a casino in the air for a similar thing. But the point is that I think as the costs come down and the information age proliferates, our time becomes more valuable than the resources. And I think this is where we're really going to see a big expansion. It's going to be, look, I'll provide you no-cost content, and it's going to be paid for, you know, similar to books. I'm helping publish the books right now. In that book, when it mentions products, like if they talk about preparing your taxes, and there's a new tax service called Shoebox. Shoebox allows you to walk around with an envelope. Every time you do something, you stuff the paperwork in the envelope. They're prepaid envelopes. Whenever you feel like it, you stick them in a mailbox. It mails them to Shoebox. They categorize them and help keep your accountant prepared for your taxes. It's a great service for people who don't keep track any other way. They can take pictures of receipts and deliver them digitally or whatever. Now, the book is telling people how to do better on their taxes. Shoebox is willing to compensate the cost of the distribution of that because every time that accountant gets a new client, Shoebox gets a potential new client as well. As long as we're aware of that, that's a fair trade-off.
Amazing. It's so fun to see what this opportunity, the digital world, creates for us. And, of course, clearly, there are some businesses, structures, strategies, et cetera, that are going to fall by the wayside. But this Shoebox example is a great example of where, yeah, some CPAs are going to go out of business because they can't figure out how to deal with the new technology, whereas other new ones may come into the business because they have the ability to deal with the technology and prefer the business structure because of it. And so this natural changeover that occurs, which we see in all areas of life, coyotes are a great example. The coyote's diet has changed drastically over time because it's had to adapt to what is available to eat. And yet there are still coyotes. They might look a little different. You know, their structure has changed, et cetera. Literally, physically, their structure has changed. But they adapt and thrive because of it. And human beings should be able to adapt more than anything. Now, I'm well aware some people are very resistant to change, but this is what our world is bringing us, and it's coming faster and faster and faster. So to the degree that people can embrace that change, make sure that they are lifelong learners. What's our little saying that we like to end with? Keep learning, keep earning. And when you're a lifelong learner, you'll be able to adapt some of this technology, make wonderful use of it. That Shoebox service sounds heaven. That's actually literally what I've done with my bookkeeper for about 17 years. I just throw her a FedEx once a week with all my stuff in it, and she makes my accountant prep time down to zero. It's a beautiful service.
Awesome. Quick question. If you had a chance to fly across country or wherever and it was free, but it was a 2 to 3 hour sales pitch on the plane, worth it? Would you do it?
Whoo! I am extremely anti-marketing, and I also happen to be extremely anti-gambling. I have to tell you, I think I'd rather pay for my plane seat and have the peace and quiet.
But two separate scenarios. Gambling, I understand. Marketing, same thing. You'd rather have the peace and quiet on the marketing side as well.
Yep, I'm sticking with my story. I'd pay for my seat. But I know a lot of people
wouldn't.
Well,
that's nice because, I mean, you know that not everyone will adapt to that. But that certainly would probably provide travel for a whole other level of traveler, to be able to have that subsidized. My only fear would be is that the people who would use it would be the people who couldn't afford it, and how much of a marketing asset is that?
Yeah, good question.
So 10 seconds, we're down to it. I hope that you guys enjoyed this. I enjoyed talking about it today. I got a couple books I'm going to put up there for you guys for resources. Thanks so much, Kim Butler. This is Guide to Financial Peace, No BS Money Guide. Peace out.